Okay, good evening, everyone. Parshas Balak, Tavshin Ayin Ches. And before we start inside, I want to get a chance to share with you a thought from Parshas Vezayis HaBracha, which we never really have a chance to have a share about. But there is a pasuk in Parshas Vezayis HaBracha that very much relates to this week's Parsha. Because this week's Parsha is the Parsha of Bilam, where Balak, the king of Moab, hires Bilam to curse the Jewish people, and the whole story of how Bilam tries to curse the Jewish people, and Hashem does not let him. So there is a pasuk in Vezayis HaBracha that reads, "V'leikam nabiyoid b'Yisrael k'moshe." There will never rise amongst the Jewish people a prophet like Moshe. No one will ever be a prophet like Moshe. That's what it says in Parashat Vezayis HaBracha. By Moshe's death, the Torah declares, no one will ever rise to be like a prophet like Moshe. But the Medrash says, "Be Yisrael loikam," amongst the Jewish people, there will never be one that rises. But amongst the Gentiles, there was someone that was like that arose to be like Moshe. Umano, who's that? Bilam. Bilam, our sages say, although there's no one like Moshe amongst the Jewish people, ever was, ever will be, but amongst the Gentiles, there was someone that arose to be like Moshe, and that was Bilam. And, of course, this is discussed by many of the commentaries, what in the world does this medrash mean? I mean, could tell me that Bilam had literally had the same level of prophecy as Moshe? We know for Parshas Baloscha that when Miriam spoke against Moshe, that Hashem said Moshe has the highest, clearest form of prophecy that no prophet has. Are we saying that the wicked Bilam was someone who reached that same level? We know that in our, the Rashi tells us in this, based on the words of this parasha, of this week's parasha, that whenever Hashem spoke to Bilam, Bilam couldn't stand. He fell to the ground. He wasn't a Moshe Rabbeinu, clearly wasn't like that. The Torah says, he falls and his eyes are revealed. Rashi tells us that when Hashem comes to speak to Bilam, it's in a very happenstance way. It's not in a permanent way. It's not in a significant way. It's like in a very passing way. So what's the comparison to Moshe? So I want to share with you a thought from the Aznayim L'Torah. Aznayim L'Torah was our Zalman Sarazka Zatzal, and he has a very interesting approach here. And his approach basically works with the idea that, yeah, there was a point of time that Bilam was as big as Moshe. There was a point of time he was as great as Moshe. But by the time we meet him in this week's Parsha, he's not anything like Moshe anymore. Now, how do we understand, though, how did he become like Moshe? Based on what? So he explains that after the Torah was given to the Jewish people, and we know that Hashem went around to all the nations of the world, and all the nations of the world refused the Torah, however, and only the Jewish people accepted the Torah, but the Ribbono Shel Olam still knew that there's going to be a complaint amongst the nations of the world. And that is that, well, you know, you gave the Jewish people Moshe. You gave them a prophet and a leader like Moshe who led them and who brought them to accepting the Torah. We never had anybody. So it's not fair. It's not fair that we are left out because of the fact that, look, they had a prophet. We didn't. So Hashem says to them, okay, I'll give you a prophet. Let's see what happens. But I'll give you a prophet. So Zion the Torah says, and that prophet that was given to them, Bilam, started off as great as Moshe. They had the person, they had the prophet, just like Moshe, to work with. However, says the Zion the Torah, a prophet's level is never stagnant. It's not like a prophet gets a level and that's it, that's what he is. But rather, his level depends on, number one, how he treats his prophecy, and number two, how the people that he's leading look and treat the prophecy. And depending on that, that's going to make a difference in the level of the prophet, how great the prophet is, what his level of prophecy is going to be. So for instance, if we examine Moshe, when Moshe went up to receive the Torah, and the Jewish people sinned by the golden calf, so Hashem said to Moshe, "Raid migdulascha, go down from your greatness." And Hashem, the Gemara Bracha says that Hashem said to Moshe, the only reason I gave you this greatness was for the Jewish people. Now that the Jewish people have sinned, what do you need this greatness for? So this is a concept that we find in a number of places, that the level of Moshe's prophecy depended on the Jewish people. But the way that the Znaim of the Torah explains it, which I find very interesting, is he explains it that if the Jewish people aren't utilizing Moshe's greatness and prophecy, then there's no reason for him to have it. If the Jewish people have a Moshe with its greatness and prophecy, and they still sin by the golden calf, then that kind of sin was enough of a sin to say that you're not utilizing the prophecy of Moshe, and therefore Moshe has no need for this level of prophecy. Because why does he have this prophecy? Why does he have this level of prophecy? Moshe Rabbeinu's level, Moshe's greatness in prophecy had a lot to do with what can be done for the Jewish people with that kind of level of prophecy. But if the Jewish people don't utilize it, then Hashem says, Reid Megdulatzcha, go down from your level. Now, the truth is, just thinking about it right now, why this only happened by the sin of the golden calf and not by other sins, I'm not sure. Just something that came to my mind right now. But the way that the Znaim of the Torah is explaining it is that Moshe's loss of his level when the Jewish people sinned by the golden calf was because the Jewish people were not utilizing it. So what did Moshe do? He came down, he destroyed the eagle, he punished the sinners, he brought the Jewish people to tshuva, he brought them back to a level in which not only did he get back his level, but it was even higher. Because that was after it was after Moshe Rabbeinu went and received the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah the second time after Hashem forgave the Jewish people. Moshe came down and his face was shining. Moshe was shining. The Jewish people were going to look at him. He had to start wearing a veil. That Moshe didn't have that before. So really, what comes out is that Moshe Rabbeinu loses his level of prophecy because the Jewish people aren't utilizing it. He comes down. He rectifies what he can. He brings Hashem to say, Salachti kedvarecha, I have forgiven the Jewish people like you say. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just go back to his level, he goes even to a higher level. So here is an example of where the Jewish people don't utilize Moshe's prophecy properly. Moshe's prophecy goes down. Moshe works to use his prophecy to bring the Jewish people back up, to bring them to forgiveness, to bring them to tshuva. That now brings his level up and even goes higher. So that's examining how Moshe treats his prophecy and what happens when the Jewish people don't treat Moshe's prophecy properly. Now let's take a look at Bilaam. Bilaam starts off as a great prophet. So the Medrash tells us that when Hashem gives the Torah and the Jewish people, and the nations of the world hear all the noise that's coming from the giving of the Torah, the Medrash says that the nations of the world were afraid that it sounds like another Mabel's coming. Are we going to be destroyed? So they come to Bilaam, and Bilaam says, don't worry about the flood. There's no more floods. Hashem said no more floods. You hear that noise? That's due to Jewish people. That's it. No more. That's it. Go back to what you're doing. Don't worry about anything. That's all about the Jewish people. Clearly, not using what he can to guide the nations of the world to serve Hashem. And not only is he not necessarily bringing them back, bringing them to accept Torah, he's not even bringing them to Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. He's never bringing them to the Seven Noachide laws. Because what do we see? We see that at the end of this week's parsha, what does Bilaam convince Balak to do? To have the Moabite women go and seduce the Jewish men into morality and idolatry. So again, he's not leading the people on the proper path. And we know that what kind of power did Bilaam have? What was Bilaam known for? Why did Balak want to hire Bilaam to curse the Jewish people? Because everybody knew that Bilaam was a mercenary. Just not a physical mercenary, a spiritual mercenary. Whoever Bilaam cursed, they were done. They would lose. So here you've got, again, Bilaam is using his powers not in the proper way, but in the improper way. Therefore, says the Zion of the Torah, and the truth is, the idea of what Bilaam did to seduce the Jewish men, that already happened according to what he's saying. That already happened after he lost everything, but after he really went down. But again, you still see what kind of person Bilaam is. You see what kind of person he is. And then it came to a point, says the Arzayim of the Torah, that basically Bilaam lost it. He lost that level that Moshe Rabbeinu had, to the point that now he's at a point that whenever he does receive a prophecy, he can't stand, he falls to the ground. And not only that, Bilam gets to be known as a sorcerer, which could be explained to mean he lost his prophecy completely. And the only thing he would be able to now to revert to was sorcery to give him some kind of supernatural power. So therefore, says the Aznayim L'Torah, what's happening in this Medrash is that, yes, there was no one that ever was like Moshe Rabbeinu in prophecy amongst the Jewish people, but there was amongst the Gentiles. And that was Bilam. And yes, Bilam was, it was bestowed upon him the same powers of Moshe in order to lead the Gentile people, in order for them not to complain, we never had a prophet to lead us. And he says, well, and look what happened. Look what Moshe Rabbeinu did with his prophecy, with his powers. Look what Bilam did with his powers. And therefore, Bilam eventually lost those powers. And yes, he was no more like Moshe Rabbeinu, not to compare like Moshe Rabbeinu. And not only that, if you look at the people who demanded a prophet from Bilam, right? So Bilam didn't work. So how about another one? The answer is, how about another one? Look what you did with this one. You didn't complain with what he did. The Jewish people, look what the Jewish people did by the Pesach Sheni. They're in the desert. Hashem tells the Jewish people, tells Moshe, tells Jewish people, it's time to have a Korban Pesach. And all the laws of Korban Pesach apply. So the people that are impure, they can't bring the Korban Pesach. When they come to Moshe, they say, we want a mitzvah. We want the Korban Pesach. When the Jewish people were demanding, their ability through the prophet to connect to Hashem. And what did all those people do at Bilam? They hired him to curse people. They never went ahead and improved themselves based on his leadership. And therefore, seeing how they dealt with the prophet, that was already a sign to say to them, look, I give you your best shot. You had your best shot now, and you clearly neglected it. Well, that's it, no more. And therefore, says that Aznayim L'Torah, at one point of time, Moshe and Bilam were the same, but then as time went on, Bilam did not use his powers in the proper way, nor did the people use his powers in the proper way, he went down to losing, to not being anything like Moshe. And the Aznayim L'Torah says, or actually the way this is brought down in Yalkut Lekach Tov, is if you think about it, this is really, what's the lesson to us from here? When Chazal tell us, when the sages tell us, that there was never a prophet amongst the Jewish people like Bilam, but amongst the Gentiles there were. And we have this whole explanation. What's in there for us to learn from it? What do we need to know this for? What are we supposed to take out of this idea that there was someone as Bilam was as great as Moshe at one point of time? What are we supposed to take from it? And the answer is, we're supposed to take from a very important lesson, and that is that when you see one person succeed, another person succeed, it's not just about, well, he was given opportunities, he wasn't. Very often, two people can be given the same opportunities. And the problem is, one utilized it properly, and one did not. It's not all about, well, you know, he had a chance and he didn't have a chance. Very often, it's about the fact that we are given opportunities and we don't use it. And very often, it can be, there may be times that, yes, one person had certain opportunities, one person wasn't given certain opportunities. You know, the Rebbeinu Shlomo puts us where we're supposed to be. We're not, some of us are supposed to be one way, others are supposed to be another way. But it doesn't always mean that every time we haven't succeeded, it's because, well, we just didn't have the opportunities. We weren't given the abilities. We could be just like someone else who succeeded very well, just that that person utilized opportunities and we didn't. And that's the lesson from Bilam. Bilam had the opportunity to be just like Moshe Rabbeinu, and he blew it because he wasn't interested in it. He had the capabilities, he had the opportunity, he didn't use it, that's why he became what he became. And that's something for us to be very aware of in life.
But what happened after the spies with Moshe's level?
It doesn't say. It does say. Because once the Jewish people were actually, there's a Rashi in Devarim, I believe it is, that once the Jewish people were excommunicated in the sense that they were all going to die in the desert, Moshe didn't have the prophecy that he had until they all died.
Because they didn't need it.
Well, they didn't. It could be the same idea. If they didn't utilize it, and because of that, they were going to die in the desert, well, then Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have it. So although there was a new generation that was growing, he wasn't going to have it until that whole generation died out. That's a good point. Okay. Let's now learn some sukkim here. Bring out a few points. So we have that Balak sees the Jewish people on his doorstep, and he's getting very nervous. And he wants to, and he hires Bilam to curse. He wants to bring Bilam to him, to hire him, to pay him to curse the Jewish people. The first time his emissaries come, Hashem says, don't go. The second time he says, you want to go, go, but you can only say what I'm going to say. And as Bilam is going, there is the famous episode of Bilam and his donkey. So let's take a look now at the bottom of page 858. Which is Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Second to last line on the page, last word on the line. Vayakum Bilam HaBoker, Bilam arose in the morning, Vayachaveshas Asoinoi, and he saddled his donkey, Vayelachim Sarei Boyav, and he went with the officers of Moyav. Vayicharef Elohim Kehoilachu, Hashem became angry that he was going. Vayisyatzei Malach Hashem Baderech L'Satan Lai, and the angel of God stood on the road to the Satan, to impede him. He was riding on his donkey, Shana Rav Imai, and two lads with him. So the word, the Torah says that an angel of Hashem stood on the way, to impede him, to stop him from going. So if you take a look at Rashi, it's the top Rashi in the right column, the last two words of the line, which means to impede him. Malach shal rachamim haya. This was an angel of mercy. And he was trying to hold them back from sinning, so they shouldn't sin and become lost. So, you know, when you read the story, and the angel is there and it's got a sword, you say to yourself, oh, this is a mean angel. This is a scary angel. This is a punishing angel. And the answer Rashi says is, no, Rashi tells us, this is not an angel of punishment. This is an angel of mercy. This is an angel trying to stop Bilam from destroying himself. And the commentaries say that how does Rashi know this is an angel of mercy? The answer is because if you look in the wording, it says, Vayisyatzev Malach Hashem Baderech V'Satan Lai. So the angel is called a Malach Hashem, not Malach Elohim, Malach Hashem. Yud Hei Vavin Hei. That's the name of Hashem. That's the name of mercy of Hashem. That's the name of Hashem that implies mercy. So this angel was not an angel of anger, angel of punishment. It was an angel of mercy. Another explanation is, it could have just said, and the angel of Hashem stood on the derech l'satan to impede. What's loy? To impede him, or to impede to him. And therefore, the word loy very often means for him, on behalf of him. That this angel was on the derech l'satan loy to impede for him, on his behalf. But that's what it's about. It was for his benefit. To stop him from sinning. All right, so let's see what happens. The donkey sees the angel of Hashem standing on the way. It's got a sword drawn. So the donkey veers from the path, goes into the field. And Bilam hit the donkey to bring it back on the path. Then the Malach of Hashem stood in a path of vineyards. With walls on each side. So again, the donkey sees the angel of Hashem. And it pushes itself against the wall. And basically presses his foot against the wall. Hits it again. And the Malach of Hashem continued to pass ahead of them. He stood in a narrow place. There was no way of getting through. It was a complete blockade. The donkey saw the angel of God, and it squatted under Bilam, not moving. Bilam became very angry, and he hit the donkey with his stick. So very clearly, Bilam sees what's happening here as an impediment. It's impeding his way, right? He wants to get to Balak. He's got some money to make. And this donkey is in the way. And therefore, he hits it once, twice. The third time, it says he got angry and he hit it. Because, look, this thing's in the way. But the truth is, it wasn't in the way. He's trying to save him. Trying to save him from the Malach. The Asim was trying to save him from the Malach. The Malach was trying to save Bilam. And Bilam is looking at all of this as what a day. Absolutely. This is all that's happening to me. My donkey is starting up with me. That's what I need today. And Harav Pamzatzal used to bring out from here that, you know, there's so many times that we try to get somewhere and try to accomplish something, try to attain something. And we're trying to get a certain job, a certain position, get into a certain school. And this is getting in the way, and that's getting in the way. And it's almost like, you know, how are all these things coming up? Like, it makes no sense. Why are all these things happening the way they're happening? And we think that it's an impediment. It's in our way. It's an obstacle. But the truth is, maybe it's not. Actually, maybe this is Hashem's mercy. All these things getting in your way are Hashem's angels of mercy that are keeping you away from this kind of situation that's not for you. That's exactly what was happening with the angel. The angel Bilam thinks this is the worst day. This is a bad day. But actually not. All that's just happening in front of him is actually really for his good. They say that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, he was the Rav of a small town called Sitivyan. I believe that was the last city that he was a Rav in Europe, because eventually he traveled, I believe he could not support himself in Europe. So he went to America. He went as a mishulach, as collecting funds. And he went to America to collect funds, and he eventually landed up, I think he was first in Seattle, I'm not sure, or Toronto. But because of the fact that he left Europe and went to America to collect funds, he eventually took a position in America. Now, there was a point of time that he applied for a position in a bigger city. And whatever it was, whatever the details are, I think if I remember correctly, he was kind of expecting to get it, and then somebody else came in and another Rav got it. But like, he was very disappointed he didn't get it. And the fact that he didn't get to start the position is what forced him to have to leave Europe, leave his family, and start going collecting. But he also realized after a certain point of time that if he would have landed up becoming the Rav of that city, he would have been dead. Because when the Nazis took over that city, it was completely wiped out. No one survived. And therefore, what was really a disappointment for him actually brought him to the point of being able to survive the war, not only to survive the war, to be able to become and accomplish what he accomplished. So there are very often, the lesson of this angel of mercy is that there are many angels of mercy that come to us in our life. And we're faced with them like Bilam, that we don't understand it. It seems like it's not right. It seems like it's wrong. But in essence, it's all Hashem's angels of keeping us out from where we shouldn't be.
Well, we don't know until later.
Halavai, we should know even until later. Sometimes we know, and sometimes we never know. Sometimes it's about Amunah. Okay. All right. So let's now continue. We're on Pasuk Chav Ches. Vayiftach Hashem es pi ha'asen. Hashem opened the mouth of the donkey, Vatomer leBilam, and it said to Bilam, Me'asisi lecha, what did I do to you? Kikisani zeh shalosh regolim, that you hit me these three times. So Rashi right away comments on this word regolim. If it was meant to just say times, then it should have just said zeh shalosh pa'amim, this three times. Why are we using the word regolim? And therefore Rashi tells us, Zeshalash Regal, this is Rashi Chav Ches, the column to the left, the middle of the column. Ramazalai, the donkey hinted to Bilam, Atam Avaka Shlakar Uma Chayega Shalash Regalim Bashana. You're trying to uproot a nation that celebrates the Shalash Regalim three times a year. Ain't gonna happen. Trying to hint to Bilam, you're trying to uproot this people that have the Shalash Regalim, Pesach Shavuos and Sukkos. They go to the Beis HaMikdash and they celebrate Yontif and Yerushalayim by the Beis HaMikdash. You're trying to uproot that nation? It's not going to happen. The nation that celebrates Shalosh Regalim, you can't destroy them. Okay, so now we need to explain. So what is so unique about the Shalosh Regalim? What's so unique about this mitzvah more than any other mitzvah? So I want to share with you two explanations that I saw. Two explanations are brought down in the Sefer Yetzirah Torah. And one explanation is like this. And that is, they brings that explanation from the Sacher Chever. The Sacher Chever explained that the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim is the complete opposite of what Bilam is and what the nations of the world represent. As we're going to talk about soon, Bilam is the kind of person that he's a prophet, he recognizes Hashem. We're going to see later soon that he recognizes the greatness and eternity of the Jewish people. He wishes to die like they die. He wants their eternity. But one thing he doesn't want. Doesn't want to live like them. He wants to be able to live the life of physical pleasure, physical desires. He wants to be close to Hashem. He's a prophet. He must realize the greatness of Hashem. But he still only wants to do that on his terms, on his terms of still being involved in the pleasures of the world. If you look at the Jewish people, if there is any mitzvah that actually shows a Jewish people's willingness to give up everything for the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's Shalosh Regalim. Because Shalosh Regalim, when the Torah, in Parshas Kisisa, the Torah says that if you're afraid that when you go to Yerushalayim, think about it, every adult man goes to Yerushalayim three times a year. That means three times a year, everybody's property is basically abandoned. Even if the women stay home, right? If there's any kind of nation that wants to attack Israel, all they need to find out is Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, every man is in Yerushalayim. Everything else is fair game. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says to the Jewish people, no one's going to covet your land. You're going to go to Eretz, you're going to go for Shalosh Regalim, your land is going to be safe. And this is really so much an important, so essential to the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim. The whole idea that the Jewish people believe that Hashem will protect their land even though they've abandoned it, basically. It's such an important part of the mitzvah that the Sefer Chaver explains that the halacha is like this. The halacha is, Misha ein lo karka ein oila l'regel. If you do not own real estate, you do not have the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. Why? What's the connection? The answer is, because if you don't have real estate, you got nothing to worry about, pretty much. You got nothing to worry about. Or you certainly don't have what as much to worry about. And therefore, so this whole idea of putting your trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam and basically leaving everything of your property open and fair game for your enemies, putting your trust in Hashem that everything will be okay when I go to the Beis HaMikdash during Yontif, that is an essential part of the mitzvah. That's the exact opposite of Bilam. Bilam doesn't want to give up his physical his physicality. Bilam doesn't want to give up his worldly possessions and his worldly desires. And the Jewish people, three times a year, basically abandon everything that they have for the service of Hashem. And therefore, that was the hint to Bilam, if you think you're going to uproot the Jewish people who celebrate Shalosh Regalim, not going to happen. Because they are the complete opposite of what you are and the people that you represent. That's one explanation. Another explanation is the following. Basically, when Bilam wants to curse the Jewish people, so what's his basis? What's he going to use for a basis to curse the Jewish people? So the Targum Yonasan says, based on a pasuk later, that Bilam was hoping to cash in on the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. We know the sin of the golden calf has not been completely forgiven. In every generation, what befalls the Jewish people is another level, another layer of forgiveness for the sin of the golden calf. The sin of the golden calf, even though Hashem said, Salachti, I forgave, it's not completely forgiven. And Bilam wanted a cash in on the Chet HaEgel. As a matter of fact, the Yavanim, according to many commentaries, were still trying to cash in on the Chet HaEgel. Trying to say to the Jewish people, you're not Hashem's favorite people. The sin of the golden calf, that ended you and Hashem. Bilam also wanted a cash in on the sin of the golden calf to use that sin as his basis to curse the Jewish people. However, there's a medrash that says that Eila Moyade Hashem, when the Torah tells us about the Yomim Tovim, the holidays, it says, these are the festivals of Hashem. And the medrash says, Yavoy Eila Moyade Hashem, let Eila Moyade Hashem come, V'yachap and atone on Eila Lehecha Yisrael. What do the Jewish people say about the golden calf? This is your God. So we say the Eila Mayadei Hashem atones for the Eila Elohecha Yisrael. The Shalosh Regalim atoned for the sin of the golden calf. Therefore, the donkey said to Bilam, you think you're going to be able to cash in on the sin of the golden calf? I got something coming. You got something coming. I got to tell you something. There's Shalosh Regalim, the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim that atones for that sin. So it's not going to work. Now, what's the connection? What is the correct explanation? How does the sin, how do the Yomim Tovim, how do the holidays atone for the sin of the golden calf? So I was thinking, again, at least if you're looking at the Shalosh Regalim, which maybe by saying Elamayaleh Hashem, it's going on more than the Shalosh Regalim, but from the point of the Shalosh Regalim, we could possibly say something similar to what we just said. And that is, the sin of the golden calf, we know, started because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down. The Jewish people expected him to come down. And when that happened, what did they do? They fell apart. They lost their composure, they fell apart, and they came demanding, we need a new leader. The starting point of the sin of the golden calf was how the Jewish people basically lost their composure. They lost their composure. We don't have a leader. How are we going to do this? Perhaps based on what we just said before, that an essential part of the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim is to abandon everything, right? So, you know, Hashem says, well, you got to leave everything and come. How can we do that? And clearly if they do that, it will be a situation where they'd be very, very nervous. Very nervous and very uneasy and not at peace at all. If, you know, if they'd be forced to go anyway, you can imagine a person goes for Yontif and he doesn't know what's happening at home. What kind of Yontif is he having? He's nervous, he's upset, and he's clearly not being the way he's supposed to be. But when the Jewish people go for Shalosh Regalim, they go with full trust and faith in the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a situation where they could also be very nervous, but they're not. They put their trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they stay calm, and they approach Yontif in the way they're supposed to. So perhaps in that sense, we have a connection between the Shalosh Regalim atoning for the sin of the golden calf, in the sense the sin of the golden calf started because the Jewish people got nervous and basically lost themselves, and the Shalosh Regalim is a mitzvah where they're supposed to do the opposite of that, not be nervous about the fact that they left everything behind, but rather put their full trust in Hashem and feel calm and collected in His hands. But those are the two explanations as to why the mitzvah Shalosh Regalim would be the mitzvah that protect the Jewish people from Bilam's curses. Now, let's read a little further here. So the donkey says to Bilam, "Why'd you hit me?" So pasuk chav tes va'yimer Bilam la'asen ki salalt me. Bilam says to the donkey, "You backed me." Liyashchara biyadi, when I have a sword in my hand, ki ata arek pich, I'd kill you right now. Va'tamer asen al Bilam. So the asen says to Bilam, "Halay anoichi asen chasher achavto alai. I'm the donkey that you have ridden upon. Me'ait charayim azeh." From the first day of your life until from when you came into life until today, have I been accustomed to doing this to you? And he said no. Meaning, so what is the donkey saying back to Bilam? Bilam says to the donkey, "What kind of fool you made out of me?" And the donkey says to Bilam, "You know, you've been riding on me from day one. Did I ever act like this before? So, like, don't you kind of realize something's going on?" And what happens next? Page 862. Vayigal Hashem es enei Bilam. Hashem reveals, opens the eyes of Bilam. Vayaras malach Hashem nitzav baderech v'charba shtufa biyadai. And he sees the angel of Hashem standing on the path with his sword drawn. Vayikoyt vayishtachu lapav. And he knelt and he bowed down to his on his face. Vayayimei elav malach Hashem. And the angel said to Bilam, "Amai kises hasein chazer shalosh regalim. Why did you hit your donkey these three times? In Anechi Yatzasi LaSatan, I went out to impede Karneg LaNechdi because you were rushing to go off the path. You were rushing on the path against me." Vatirani Ha'asen Vateit Lafanai Zel Shalosh Regalim. The donkey saw me and veered these three times. Leinatzami Panai Ki Ata Gam Ois Charakti Vasechi Esi. If it wouldn't have veered off, you'd be dead and it would be alive. Vayomer Bilam el Malach Hashem. So Bilam said to the angel of Hashem, "Chatasi, I sinned. Ki lo yadati, I didn't know. Ki ata nitzav lekrasi baderech, that you're standing on the path. Va'ata now, im rabbeinach hashuv aliv, it's bad in your eyes, I'll go back." So he turns to the Malach. Bilam says to the Malach, "Ki lo yadat chatasi, I sinned, because I didn't know you're on the path. If I didn't know, then I sinned?" You don't know. What are we supposed to do about it? So if he was trying to excuse himself, he'd just say, "Excuse me, Malach, I didn't know you were here." But he says, "Chatasi, I sinned, for I didn't know you were here." Why is that a sin? And the answer that's given by the Shalah is that when you're supposed to know something and you don't know it, that's a sin. The Rebbe Shalom gave you a mind and intellect to think about things, not just to go without thinking. You're supposed to think about what's happening around you. Now look at that donkey. Did the donkey ever do this to you? He never did anything like this to you. All of a sudden now he does it. Nu, chacham, think. Think, wonder, contemplate. What's going on here? That much at least he should have done. And because he didn't do that, that's why he didn't know there was an angel there. That's why he hit the donkey, and that's why he carried on the way he did. So he says to the Malach, Chatase, I sinned because I didn't know you were here. Yep, I sinned because I didn't know. My sin was I didn't know. I should have known, but I didn't. Okay. Now, so eventually Bilam shows up by Balak, and Balak's really happy. And he sends, and Bilam walks off to try to curse the Jewish people. So take a look on page 864. Pasuk Zion. Vayisa Meshaloi Vayoymar. This is already after Hashem has put his words into the mouths of the Bilam, and now he's coming and telling it to Balak. So Vayisa Meshaloi Vayoymar, he declaimed this parable and said, Min Aram Yancheni Balak Malachmoi Mahar Bekedim. From Aram, the king Balak, the king of Moab, led me from the mountains of the east. L'cha'ara li Yaakov, go curse for me Yaakov, l'cha'azama Yisrael, and go bring anger upon Yisrael. Ma'akov, how can I curse? L'kavoy kel, God does not curse. Ma'ezam, how can I bring anger? L'zam Hashem, Hashem doesn't get, is not angry. Ki me'reish tsurim erenu, for from its origins I see it like a rock. Migvais ashurenu, and from the hills do I see it. Hein am levadad yishkain, behold, it's a nation that will dwell in solitude, v'agayim leizchashav, and not be reckoned amongst the nations. Mi mana afar Yaakov, who has counted the dust of Yaakov, v'mispar as forever Yisrael, or numbered a quarter of Israel. Tamais nafshi mois yisharim, and my soul died the death of the upright. Siacharisi kamayu, may my end be like his. Okay. So, clearly, what does Bilam is shown, there's Hashem's not angry, Hashem's not cursing. I see their strength from the beginning of time. They're separate from all other nations. They're not reckoned amongst the nations. Who can count them? And then he says, basically, I wish I would die like the righteous ones of them. Okay, so the obvious question is, if you see the greatness of the Jewish people, right? So wouldn't you say, I wish my lot would be amongst them, right? He's talking about how the Jewish people are separate. They're not going to be counted like they're how does the words go? It is a nation that will dwell in solitude, not be reckoned among the nations. This is the nation that's going to be separate and above everybody else. So what does Bilam say? Thomas Napshi. Halavai, if only I should die like them. What are you talking about death for? And what's interesting is that what Bilam is basically saying is that Bilam, when he sees the uniqueness of the Jewish people, he sees the uniqueness of the Jewish people really in its truest form. He sees the eternity of the Jewish people. And not just the eternity of the Jewish people in this world, but the eternity of Olam Haba, of the Olam Haba reserved for the Jewish people. He sees the true essence of the solitude, of the oneness, of the uniqueness of the Jewish people. And he knows that doesn't just stop in this world. It goes to Olam Haba. And therefore, it's at this point when he recognizes the true uniqueness and the eternity of the Jewish people, then he doesn't say, okay, you know, I wish I'll have their lot in this life. No, he's going for the true eternity of the Jewish people. He's focusing on the true solitude of the Jewish people. The unique state of the Jewish people in Olam Haba, eternity. That's what he's looking at. So yeah, you may kind of wonder to us, why is he talking about death for? Well, it depends how you look at death. So Mordechai Kamenetsky brings a very, very cute story. Very cute story with his son. He had a son in fourth grade who was doing a report on Abraham Lincoln. And he said, the son did a great job on talking about his log cabin childhood, his career as a lawyer, his presidency, the difficulty of being president during the Civil War, signing the Emancipation Proclamation, and the report looked great until the end of the report, which read, Abraham Lincoln died on Friday morning, April 15, 1865, and was buried in Oak Ridge Cemetery outside Springfield, Illinois. So Rabbi Kamenetsky said to his son, that's it? That's how you describe his death? I mean, he was shot and killed. He was assassinated. He was the first president of the United States ever assassinated. And you just say he died? So his son looks at him with a look, and he says, my report was on the life of Abraham Lincoln. Who cares how he died? He died! Okay, fine. That's an example, right, of how you kind of separate death from life. Right? I'm talking about his life, not about his death. But we know that when it comes to life, you know, the truth is life is just a portal to what happens afterwards. We don't just look at life as well, the death is just, you know, that's the end of everything and nothing. It's not nothing. That's the step into the true reality, into true life. And this is what Bilam recognized. He recognized very clearly that the Jewish people are an eternal people in its truest and ultimate sense. And when he saw that, he said, Tamas nafshi meis yisharim, I wish I could attain that. If only I could attain that. But Bilam made a big mistake. Bilam did what a lot of people do nowadays. And I'm not criticizing it, because it's definitely an important thing. You know, there are people who live their lives with no observance of Yiddishkeit whatsoever, but they say, I want to die Jewish. And unfortunately, it's becoming less. People are going more for cremation and things like that, chas v'shalom. It's becoming less. But there are still people out there, there used to be a lot more, there still are, people who, you know, when I die, I want everything to be Jewish, I want everything to be Orthodox. And Kanetsky brings a very interesting story that he had a neighbor who was one time a former yeshiva student, but he dropped everything. He joined the army and he rose to the rank of general. And he and his wife, they were neighbors, they used to eat in his sukkah, they became very friendly. So when the husband of the general was diagnosed with a fatal illness, so he asked Rabbi Kamenetsky, would he officiate at his wedding? Would he officiate at his funeral? And he told him that he said he'll only do it if he's buried according to halacha. Okay? That according to halacha would mean that he's not going to be buried in his uniform. He's going to be buried in tachrichim, in the special shrouds that's worn. And this Rabbi Kamenetsky said, this is the only way he's going to do it. It's got to be according to Jewish law. And the man agreed. The man agreed. In general. He agreed not to be buried in his uniform, but to be buried kalach. It's a very admirable, it's an admirable thing. It's an important thing. It's one of the most important things that a Beryl Society of Chavre Kadisha do. It's try to make sure people, even if they didn't leave their lives Jewish, should at least be buried Jewish. But at the same time, but there's a big mistake in there, because it's not just about dying Jewish. It's about living Jewish. As the Chafetz Chaim said, Bilam spoke about dying like Yesharim. He spoke about dying like the righteous of the Jewish people. But he thought that he could live his life the way he wants to, right? And then some another still have Olam Haba. It doesn't work. And as the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, in Yiddish it comes up, it really sounds good. The Chafetz Chaim said, "As is nit ken kunz to starben bi ayid." It's not a kunz. There's nothing special about dying like a Jew. The grester kunz is ois leben al yarn bi ayid. The real kunz, the real accomplishment, the real act that's the real thing that's unique and special in life, is to live like a Jew. Right? It's hard to translate the word kunz, because kunz sometimes means a trick. But like basically, there's no trick dying like a Jew. The trick is to live like a Jew. And again, as much as not trying to knock people who only want to be buried Jewish, But at the same time, that's not what life's about. Life's about living Jewish so that when you are very Jewish, you then enter, you've gone through the portal into the truest life of eternity in Olam Haba. And I just wanted to mention something else. And this is brought down the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah, and they bring down a saying the Chafetz Chaim used to say, that when people complain, they can't make a living. So he used to say, people say, as is shver tzeleben, it's hard to live. Nitamit vas tzeleben, there's not what to live off of. And the Chafetz Chaim says, and I would say to them, and to die, you have what to die off of? You complain about what to live off of. Do you have what to die off of? Do you have the mitzvahs that you need, that you should have what you need when you pass on? So, all this is pretty sober stuff, but it's important stuff that comes out of this whole lesson of Bilam, in the sense that he was, you know, desiring, yearning, pining for the death of the righteous, but didn't show any interest in living like the righteous. Okay. I want to conclude with a thought on the end of the parsha, which is where the Jewish people become enticed by the Moabite women into idolatry. So the Gemara so I'm going to share with you the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that basically after Bilam couldn't curse the Jewish people, he had to revert to Plan B. And the Gemara says that Bilam said, Eloheim shel Elu, the God of the Jewish people, Seinei Zimahu, he despises immorality. He despises lewd behavior. The Heim is Arukli Pishtan. And the Jewish people, they want new linen clothing. So he said, this is the plan. The plan is that the Jewish people, that outside of where the Jewish people are encamped, we're going to set up shops. We're going to set up curtains. These are going to be like shops. And they're all going to have linen clothing that the Jewish people want to buy. And there are going to be two saleswomen in there who usually their occupation is not being sales. Well, at least one of them, the occupation is not being a saleswoman. It's usually of ill repute. There are going to be two women in there, an older woman and a younger woman. And if I understand, and what's going to happen is that the older woman is going to come out from behind the curtains and say, "Hey, any gentlemen looking for linen clothing? Oh yeah, looking for linen clothing." They walk through the curtains into the shop, and there's the older woman and there's the younger, attractive woman. Okay, so they start talking about the price, and Jews haggle, right? So the older woman says, "This is the cost." The younger one says, "I'll give you a much better deal. I'll give you three times off." And this happens all the time. The older woman is saying this price, and the younger woman is saying, "Give me a better price." All right. Now it's time to, you know, get the merchandise. So the younger woman says to the men, "You know what? You're like, we're friends. You know, you go in the back. You can choose what you want. Take what you want." Okay. They go to the back. And there's some wine there. And as the Medrash points out, at that point of time, the wine of non-Jews, of Gentiles, wasn't forbidden. She says, "We'd like a drink of wine." And he takes a drink of wine. And it's very strong wine. And strong wine builds passion. And he's done. And he says to her, and he propositions her. And she says, "Oh yeah?" She takes out the idol Pa'ar. And she says to him, "You know, you got to worship this." He goes, "Worship it? I'm a Yid." That's what it says. "I should worship the idol?" She says, "Look, you know how you know, all you have to do is defecate in front of it. All you have to do is go to the bathroom in front of it." He does it, and then she says, "Okay, one more thing. One more thing before I agree. You've got to deny the Torah of Hashem." The point of this story, the Mefarshim say, is to show that they didn't, according to this approach, they didn't just all of a sudden go parading out to get the Jewish men. Because that wasn't going to work. Right. They had to be broken down. And not only had to be broken down, Bilam understands, no, the Gemara talks about, you know, the Gemara says they're going to go out and eat and drink and be happy and take walks, and they like this kind of clothing. There's a lot of detail mentioned here. Because the detail basically says that the Yetzirah sees that when your guard is down, he's going to break you down. And for the Jewish people, this idea of the eating and drinking and walking, for them, that depicted a certain level of indulgence that was not for them. And once they were at that point of indulgence, now we can break them down slowly but surely. They like this clothing, we get them to come in, we get them to become close, we get the young girl to start being nice, until it all eventually becomes a catastrophe. But the point is that they broke them down bit by bit, and this is a lesson about the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah does not come and attack us right away. He sees our weaknesses, and he slowly but surely breaks us down through those weaknesses until it's too late. And therefore, it's important that at all the points, including the earliest point, not to let our guard down for the Yetzirah to grab hold of us. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Have a good night. Yes. Good. Well said.